All right. Yeah. Welcome back to the Physician Syndicate podcast. I am one of your hosts, Greg.
And I'm your other host, Ronak. And I just learned that Greg has a meat guy. I mean, you're so well connected. That's fantastic.
I do have a meat guy. Yeah. It's actually a really cool shop. So for the listeners out there, we split our time between, it's not technically upstate New York, I don't think, but I think most people think anything above Manhattan is upstate New York. So spend some of our time here and then the rest of the time in Philadelphia for at least another month. We'll be moving up here full time. But up here, there is a butcher in one of the surrounding towns that has the most amazing meats. He has his own dry aged meat locker. He has literally everything you could possibly think of. He has a bunch of like wild, not wild game, but like rare animals as well. I haven't dug into that too much, but cool little spot. And I'll be going there today for some Memorial Day cooking and choosing some meats.
Greg, I probably would have been a vegan if it wasn't for our friendship.
That's true. Should we tell that story? You know, okay. Yeah, maybe it's another day, but it's a good one.
Right.
And it involves Ronak visiting me in New York City and him having his first bite of meat with me at a bar. Anyways, yeah. So today I thought we would go over something a little bit different, a little bit more practical, a little bit more hands-on for physicians that are out there that are saying, hey, maybe I have an idea for a startup that I want to go after. How do I actually do that? So today I want to talk about how would you actually go after that idea, validate that idea before you, you know, maybe jump out of your entire clinical career to figure out, oh man, this thing really didn't work. So that's the thing that I want to talk about today is how do you go about figuring out, is this idea good enough to run with, or should I just wait for the next idea? So first, let's say you have an idea. Maybe it's, let's go with like a digital health company, right? So you're a physician, you're seeing all of these problems with how medicine is practiced today. And you think, you know, I have a potential really cool solution that I want to bring to market. Maybe it's AI based because that's all the rave right now. And so let's say you do have that idea and you're saying, okay, how do I know whether or not this is an idea that I should actually go after? What you want to do is start to actually validate that idea. And I would say validate it as fast and as cheap as you possibly can. You do not want to go and spend $30,000 building a MVP. And what is an MVP? It's a minimal viable product. It's something that somebody can go on and actually use and pay you for building it. You don't want to have to get that far. You don't want to have to go $30,000 in the hole to figure out, hey, this thing doesn't actually work. So this is where you have to get pretty creative. With some of my ideas in the past, the way that I've gotten creative and figuring out, hey, is this an idea that I actually want to do something about, is I will go out and build a very, very, very cheap landing page and not even have an actual website yet. I haven't done anything else. Literally just build a landing page and use LinkedIn to your advantage. Find somebody that you think would be a target customer. Send them that landing page. See if they book a meeting with you. That's literally all you have to do. You have to say, I need to find my end customer for whatever this idea is. I'm going to build, you know, a nice looking landing page. You don't want it to look like crap, but it doesn't need to be something that you spend hundreds of thousands of dollars building. It needs to be something that you can do over a weekend or, you know, on a single weeknight. And then you actually send it out to somebody and don't tell them that it's not an actual company. Just be like, hey, take a look at this page, at this website. Are you interested in meeting about this idea? Could this actually be useful for you? What do you think, Ronak?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, Greg. So in business school, they teach you to basically talk to your potential customers to try to get ideas out of them. And I think that's the exact wrong way to go. Henry Ford actually had this really interesting quote where he said that if I went and talked to potential customers on what they want in a new product, they would have said a faster, more reliable horse. They would not have had the creativity to think of a car. You know, I think the same thing Steve Jobs said about the iPhone. People did not think that new products like this was possible. But what does make sense is validating the problem is actually real, right? So you as the physician working in whatever clinic you are, you're going to see issues that come up every single day, things that could be done more efficient, better, and just a whole host of different ways. And if you are able to find potential customers, and as Greg is saying, basically try selling them the solution before even building the solution to get validity, that's a nice way to know that the market that you're actually going after is real. And I think that, you know, Greg, one thing that I've seen you do that I think is just brilliant is just why not put together a Stripe page to see if you can start selling the product or the service even before you make it, right? I mean, if you can start collecting revenue even before writing one line of code or any bit of development, that's huge validation that this is an actual problem that people are going to be willing to pay money for. I think there's a lot of theoretical exercise that people can go through to try to say if this is a good idea or a bad idea, but selling a product before building a product, I think is a brilliant way to go.
One caveat to that, if you are going to start accepting money, you should probably have a C Corp actually registered and an actual bank account for that money to come into. Or, I mean, you also won't be able to make a Stripe page without that. But that is it's a great point, right? If you can actually book revenue before you've built the product just on, hey, we're building this product, here are the features that we're going to build, it'll come out in the next 6 months, and people are willing to pay you for that, I think you've hit something. Okay. I actually want to go through another super creative way that I've seen somebody validate their startup idea. This is a serial founder, Ankur Nagpal, the CEO of a company called Teachable, which he eventually sold to, I don't remember who he actually sold it to, but it was like a $300 million acquisition. And he went off and created his own venture capital firm called, I think, Vibe Capital, raised like $70 million and was doing that for like the past year, year and a half. And he got that itch to just start another company again. And what he did was not telling anybody, but on Twitter, he has a pretty big following. And he posted a tweet that basically said, hey, I have access to this new platform that gives you the ability to create solo 401ks. He basically got like 75 direct messages to him about that product. And he was like, okay, that gives me enough signal that there is an idea here. And that's when he went and actually started building this new company, which is called Ocho, which is exactly what I just said. It basically helps you build these like self-funded, self-built 401ks. But if he didn't get that signal after posting that tweet, highly unlikely that he actually would have ran with the idea and built something, knowing that maybe it doesn't have that much market interest. So these are some of the, like, the creative ways that you can go about just figuring out, okay, I do have some idea, but I don't know if anybody's actually going to be willing to pay for it. Just go out, make something, put something out there, or put a message out there and be like, hey, I have access to this thing, or hey, here's a landing page. Are you interested in meeting about it? It'll give you a pretty good signal of whether or not someone is actually going to be interested in using your company, using your idea, paying you money. Because yeah, revenue is king, right? You don't want to build something that people are be like, eh, I'm not actually willing to pay for something like that.
Right, right. And then I think once you get a little bit of validation from potential customers that there is interest, there is intrigue in what you're looking to solve, I think that's where it makes sense to just do a quick double check on whatever current contract you're under to make sure you're not going to be like messing anything up big time, right? So I come from the world of big tech. In all of my contracts at Facebook and Spotify and Tesla, there's always clauses that are saying that like you can't work at another company without approval from your employer. Otherwise, they have the potential to sue you. They have potential to claim that anything that you build or write code for is actually theirs, or getting into any kind of patent dispute or just any kind of thing like that is such an unnecessary thing when you have your own employment contract. So just read through it, make sure that you are able to actually go do the startup and you have the freedom to build whatever you want to build.
And that's a pretty quick fix, right? So like when I was building my company, we actually sent my contract, my employee contract with the hospital to a contract lawyer at our startup lawyer's law firm to basically say, hey, do they have any claim to any of this business? Luckily for residents, they don't have anything in there about like IP at all, which is really nice for me because attendings have a ton of intellectual property stuff within their contracts, because they're like, hey, if you create a device, we want a piece of it. Luckily for residents, I don't think they really thought through a resident's going to make a company. That's not a normal thing. So that was pretty nice. So yeah, what do you do after you kind of validate that, hey, there might be a market here? What do I go do next? The next piece is kind of building something that somebody can use. So going back to the MVP idea, build something. Does not have to be like you hire a development shop and pay them $400,000, but go out, see if you can hack something together with no code, low code tools that we've talked about for so many different times on this podcast. You have bubble.io and a lot, even Wix or Squarespace, you could probably put something together and just figure out, how do I actually create a product that is in the vein of what this idea is, and start to go after it and say, okay, if I was building a, let's figure out an actual startup idea. All right, so let's do the prior auth stuff, right? So you're creating an AI to basically automate all of your prior auths that you ever have to do, especially after talking about the UnitedHealthcare GI thing. So yeah, let's say that you just are making like basically a chatbot or an interface for physicians to create and send prior authorization forms to insurance companies. What you would want to do is start to put together, what are the components of that company that you need to build? And what is the first thing that you need to do? So I think first, you don't need to go out and actually have like an AI enabled prior auth thing. I think you just need to create some kind of portal that connects a physician with an insurance company, right? So like a fax machine, which is kind of similar to like what Doximity did. But you want to create the simplest version of what you're ultimately going to build, and figure out how much traction can you get just from that initial build. Again, you don't need to like layer on top AI yet, but you can eventually. But you really just want to say, okay, here's literally the minimal viable product that I can get out to market. I think Reid Hoffman says it best when he says, if you're not embarrassed by the first product launch, you've waited too long. So you really want to get something out there that you can get user feedback from. And you'll hear this over and over again from our podcast and others, is you need to have a insane infatuation with your customer. So in this case, it's going to be a physician, right? You have to be able to say, what are all of the tools that I need to build to make your life easier? And that's the only thing I'm focused on, is how can I make prior authorizations 10 times easier, faster, so physicians don't need to think about it ever again. And if you can have that kind of relentless focus on the customer, then you're going to create something over the next 6, 9, 12 months, 3 years, whatever it is, that is going to layer on these additional features that no longer are just a minimal viable product, but are a fully fledged product offering. Maybe you have multiple solutions at that point, but you're so focused on the customer. That's going to be the thing that drives you towards success. But again, start with the crappy version of it. You don't need the most awesome $300,000 software platform version. You just don't.
Right. I think the biggest competitive advantage that a really, really early startup has over larger competitors is your ability to move very quickly. So really what we're talking about in this section is just get going, right? Talk to your customers, talk to potential clients, put together small pieces of product to start testing that out, start building it in a fashion that doesn't require a huge amount of time commitment, expertise, external help. Just try to use bubble gum and paper clips to like string together something that can actually be somewhat functional. And then you can always iterate from there and make the product more and more robust over time. You can always add features later on, but the whole idea is to just like get something out there, because again, the being able to move quickly is your biggest competitive advantage when you still are incredibly small.
Yeah, and for my own life, when we, you know, brought FlipMD out first, it was the ugliest, slowest piece of crap platform you will ever see. It looked like it was built in like the early 1990s. But it at least gave us a signal that physicians are willing to sign up. They're willing to get verified that they're actually physicians, and we had people willing to post jobs. That was all we needed to figure out before we were like, hey, let's take the next step. Speaking of the next step, so let's say you do get that MVP out there and it starts to get some kind of initial traction. You want to make sure that you kind of button up all your legal stuff. So if this is actually becoming a company and you're starting to say, okay, we want to accept revenue, you know, go, there's a bunch of websites you can go to do this very fast, very simple. The one that I've used in the past, they're not a sponsor of this, but Gust Launch has always been my go-to. I know Carta has one, as well as AngelList. I don't know if you know of any of the other ones, but basically they will take your information and will help you create that C Corp, Delaware C Corp, so that you can actually go out and continue the rest of the process of building a startup. But that is the first piece after you're like, okay, I'm definitely doing this. I'm building the company. Now you need to go and actually incorporate that company.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And I think a lot of people get scared by the legal aspect that, you know, I keep on hearing these terms of what's a C Corp versus an S Corp versus an LLC, blah, blah, blah. It's not all that complicated. You can always hire a lawyer to come on to just help out for an hourly fee or something like that, just to get a little bit of clarity to understand what kind of incorporation works best for the type of business that you're building.
I'll make it really simple. If you're doing a startup and you're going to raise capital, you're going to have a Delaware C Corp. Like, right. Bar none. You're not going to have an LLC. So don't make the same mistake I made with doing that first.
Right. And at this step, when you are incorporating the company, I think it's also a good time to just double click on who your co-founders are going to be.
Yes, right?
No one individual has all the skill sets necessary to build a giant company. And a lot of times you do want to partner with other folks to, you know, just de-risk it a little bit, bring in other connections, bring in other skill sets, whatever it is. So trying to figure out, like, who are those other co-founders that you're going to be building this company with? And what does the equity breakdown look like? Both amongst the co-founders, maybe there's three or four of you that are founding the company together, as well as what does the equity package look like for future employees? And maybe what does the first capital raise look like? Right. So you kind of want to predict out, you know, what does the cap table or the share structure look like? Who owns what percentage of the company? Let's say 6 months out. Trying to get that in place earlier on is actually a good idea, so that we don't have to scramble and try to redo things later on as the company progresses, and you can focus specifically on the product and service and not the cap table so much.
Yeah, for sure. And for those out there that are like, hey, I do have an idea and I have no idea who I'd actually do this company with, think about who's in your network. I mean, the first company I did was with my wife. She was next to me all the time, and she ended up being my co-founder, which was great. Worked out nicely. For other people, you might not have a that's going to start a company with you or a partner. So you have to look through your network and say, you know, this is a specific idea that I have. Who in my network would be a really, really good person to co-found a company with? And so that's why I reached out to you, Ronak, was, you know, the original idea for Burnout was very, very much data focused. It was going to be hugely data focused. And that was like, hey, alarm bells went off. Ronak is a data scientist at the largest, you know, social media company in the world. Let me see if he's interested, or, you know, maybe he knows somebody that might be interested. So, like, utilize your network as much as you possibly can when you're going through this idea iteration phase and figuring out who could be a potentially good founder with you. Also, go back to your college network. Like, who is a software engineer? Who works at Google? Who works at Facebook? Who works at wherever? And just, you know, talk to them about the idea, because maybe they're looking for a completely different thing. Maybe they want to get into the startup world, but they didn't have an idea that they wanted to run with. Utilize your network to find those co-founders. There's also a bunch of resources that you can use. I think YC, Y Combinator, even has like a find a co-founder link on their website. So anybody that is, you know, maybe they were a previous YC founder and they're just like waiting for their next idea. But if somebody else has a good idea that they can jump onto, great. Maybe that you just found a full stack software engineer. But that is another good point. Like, have those conversations super early, because they'll also go into the company formation piece. So when you go on to Gust Launch or Carta or AngelList, you'll be able to know the exact kind of equity breakdown for the cap table.
I would also add real quick here, Greg, that in addition to skill sets, just working with people that you trust. No, we've mentioned this earlier on the podcast.
And like,
just really. Yeah, that you trust and like, because you're going to be working with these people quite a bit. So if you want to just rip the other person's head off, that probably is not a good person to partner with. If it's somebody that you always have to worry about and just like constantly look over your shoulders to see if they're cheating you out of something or anything like that, or being untrustworthy, that probably is a person you don't want to build a company with. Yeah, I think it's just really important to take the time to figure out who you're building a company with. Because you hear about all these stories about co-founders getting into arguments and a lot of bad stuff can come out of that.
Yeah. All right. So let's say that you now have an idea, you have an MVP, you're found your co-founding team. Like, what is your next step? And so the next step typically for a startup is get some sort of traction from that MVP. In the meantime, start to think about how the hell am I going to actually be able to fund this, especially if it's like a startup that actually needs a lot of capital to go. So you want to start thinking about putting together a pitch deck. You are not going to make a business plan. Nobody's ever going to ask you for a business plan when you're raising capital from a VC or from an angel, but they will ask you for a pitch deck. We'll do an episode entirely, I think, on pitch decks because they're an important thing. There's a lot of things you can get wrong with a pitch deck. So maybe we actually will make this more of like a series of here's a practical guide to doing a startup. And maybe this will just be the intro. But you want to go and just look up, literally go on YouTube and find, you know, template for pre-seed pitch deck. There's a company, Slidebean, that does a lot of great content around pitch decks that can be really helpful. But the high level points, you basically want to talk about you, your team, the problem you're solving, the solution you're solving, why you're solving it, how big of a market is it, you know, why are you going to win, who are your competitors, how much you're raising. That's kind of the high level overview. I don't know if I missed anything in that, but you really just want to focus on here's where we're at, here's where we're going, this is why we need capital, and this is how much capital we need. And that means you have to kind of actually fully flesh out the idea. So that's another practical advice I would give you is, even if you're not going to apply to Y Combinator, I think going through the application. So if you go to ycombinator.com and I think it's /apply or something like that, you and your co-founder should go through that entire application because it makes you think. It makes you think about your company. It makes you think about why is this going to be a gigantic $100 million revenue company with an ultimate $1 billion exit. And it really actually makes you go through and formally put down on paper all of your ideas, all of your thoughts, and it'll tailor it to what type of startup it is. I've always found it super actually useful to go through that process to figure out where am I definitely missing something in this process? Like, what am I not seeing? What are my blind spots? And really just take the time, go through it, have all of your co-founders do it with you, and figure out what is this idea? Where does it go? What are the next steps?
Yeah, I think just the discipline of making a PowerPoint presentation is actually quite a bit, right? It's easy to get caught up with all the fantasies of building a startup and just starting to write code or whatever it is. But if you and your co-founders cannot even sit down and build a 10-slide PowerPoint that really defines the problem that you're going after and why you're building a solution to solve it, you know, there might be a little bit of a question of how much dedication it really is there.
Truth. Yes. And I would say you don't need to use PowerPoint. That would be a really rough way to do a pitch deck. I would say if you've never used Canva, go on to Canva. Beautiful images, very easy to create your deck. They also have templates on there. And I think it's free to use for a certain amount of stuff that you do on there. Yeah, I mean, then we can talk a little bit more. Again, well, this will just be kind of like a high level overview, but you build your pitch deck, you figure out, you flesh it out a little bit more, your idea. Now what? Now you got to go talk to actual investors, right? Unless you're going to fund this yourself, or you're going to try to bootstrap it, which is completely fine. And I would say if you can, go for it, because you're going to own a lot more equity in your company if you don't raise capital. But if you are going to raise capital, then you need to do a very, very deep dive into the venture capital world, figure out which firms are you going to contact, which partners at those firms are you going to connect with. And you really want to find somebody that's going to mesh well with you as the entrepreneur and as your startup idea. So you don't want to send your digital health company to a consumer venture capitalist that has nothing to do with healthcare. A, that's like a very bad look. And if like it gets around their firm, if there was somebody that only does digital health and they're like, why the hell didn't they send the email to me? You probably won't get an investment because you were too lazy to actually look at all the partners' profiles. And basically what you're going to do is look to find the best people at all of the venture firms that you can reach out to and see who you can get a meeting with. Like, it takes a long time to get a venture capital firm to send you a term sheet. It's not going to be like, hey, I sent an email a week ago and I just got my term sheet. Unless you have the hottest startup in the world, it's going to take some time. It's going to take a lot of meetings. It's going to take a lot of no's. Keep that in mind too. Like, you're going to get a ton of no's, or they just ghost you, meaning like they just won't respond. So again, that's just practical advice. Also, if you really want to know who's interested in the startup idea or who has potentially forwarded it on to another founder, use something called Yesware. It's an email plugin for Gmail that can tell you when somebody opens your email so you can see it over and over again. You're like, oh, that VC at Andreessen Horowitz opened my email 37 times. And then you find out like 6 months later that one of their stealth companies is doing exactly what you're doing and they definitely just sent the deck to them.
Two things I want to add here, Greg. So one, you said that getting a term sheet is not a quick thing and there's things like ghosting involved and building relationships. I'll be totally honest with you. A startup getting in contact with the VC firm is kind of like online dating where, you know, you kind of want to show a bunch of interest, but not be too, you don't want to show too much interest. It's a little bit of a balance.
Don't be needy.
Don't be needy. Don't follow up with an email every 30 minutes because you haven't gotten a response after your initial chat. You know, play it cool a little bit. Have a bit of confidence when you're going into it. Don't get overly excited just because somebody says that they want to move forward. Like, you know, it's all about building up that relationship between you, the entrepreneur, and them as the investor. And like you said, just ghosting happens, right? You might talk to a VC firm and you think that you just had an amazing hour-long conversation doing a deep dive into the problem statement and all of a sudden you never hear from them again. Just like in the dating world, unfortunately, this stuff happens. And then the second thing that I would say that I see a lot of first-time founders doing is really emphasizing NDAs, non-disclosure agreements. They think that they have this outstanding idea and if anybody else hears it, they're just going to go and steal the idea and run with it and try to put together legal documents. That way, if anybody takes their idea and runs with it, they can go sue them. Almost no legitimate investor will actually sign an NDA. Building a startup is extremely difficult. Having a good idea is important, but the idea is such a small aspect of actually building a startup.
It's necessary, but not sufficient.
It's necessary, but not sufficient. That's right. That's right. But my real point here is that if you are thinking about putting together an NDA before you start talking to investors and you're expecting any legitimate investor to sign that NDA, think again.
Yeah. No, again, I don't think anybody would. It's not going to happen.
I've probably been asked by maybe 4 or 5 startups to sign NDAs before I see their pitch deck. And every single time I just told them, no, I'm going to pass then.
Well, it's funny too, because like they usually come back to you and they're like, oh yeah, never mind. I'll just talk to you.
Right.
Like in a month when they realize that they're not getting any meetings, they're like, oh, I wonder why not. And they're like, oh, let's just stop saying we need you to sign an NDA. The more that we talk about this, Ronak, the more I realize that we should definitely just do deep dives on each and every one of these topics.
Yeah.
Because there's so many more things that we can talk about in terms of like raising venture capital funding. The last thing I think I'll say for like practical guide, like if you're actually out there trying to raise capital right now and you're listening to this show, which is, hey, cool. Hey, also send an email to us. You know, we will take a look at the pitch deck and Ronak and I are both active angel investors. But the last piece of information I'll say is if you can utilize your network and see if you can figure out a backdoor into some of these venture capital firms where it's not just a cold email that you're sending. So if you know maybe your college roommate or somebody you know from college happens to work at one of these venture capital firms, you know, send them the deck and be like, hey, I know you're not the right person for this, but could I get a warm intro to the partner that is? Definitely utilize your network as much as you possibly can to make those intros and just make it easier to get in the door of how do I get that first meeting. But again, I think we don't need to go into too much more detail because I honestly think that each and every one of these steps we will do an episode on and we can go into much greater detail around every aspect of it.
Right.
Any last things, Ronak?
Yeah, we'll also go into not just the initial steps, but growth hacking as well. I think there's an entire world there. If like once you have a proof of concept, you have a little bit of money and you're trying to grow, how do you actually grow? Right. There's a lot of different strategies there and we'll definitely chat about all of this stuff in episodes to come.
Yep. And we're recording this on Friday, May 26th. And I just got to say, the market is ripping today. Have we gotten actually any information on the debt ceiling, Ronak?
I think we're getting closer and closer.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens when that debt ceiling, it's got to be done, right? The deal has to be eventually done. But it'll be interesting to see what happens with the market because, these stocks are just like going crazy right now. I love it. All right.
Yep.
Well, thank you for joining the Physician Syndicate podcast. This was a super tactical, practical one. And we will definitely do a series on this, especially if you guys are interested. So reach out to us if you liked it. If you're like, hey, I would love to do a deep dive on whichever part of it that you're stuck on. And maybe we'll even have you on and we'll just kind of, you know, go through and figure out how can we help you on a podcast and other folks can use it to their advantage in the future. Anyways, yeah, reach out to us, Greg or Ronak at physicians.vc. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. As always, we'd like to remind you that the information and opinions expressed on this podcast are for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as financial or investment advice. Before making any investment decisions, we strongly recommend that you consult with your lawyer, tax professional, and financial planner. Keep in mind that investing in startups can be extremely risky, and there's a potential for loss of your entire investment. Remember to always conduct thorough research and consider your risk tolerance before making any financial decisions. Stay informed, and we look forward to having you join us on our next episode of the Physician Syndicate podcast.